So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, how's it going?
It's going good, going good. Just had my business trip, and then the top 50 wrestlers with Quentin is in the books. Should be coming out
nice
shortly. The turnaround on that is not as quick, just because of the kind of everything. Just because of everything, I think it's gonna
even if I disagree with you bastards, it's always a fun listen.
Yeah, and it was interesting. We had less crossover than normal, or that we've had historically, which was interesting. We both agreed that this was our funnest time doing the podcast, doing the top 50 in the three that we've done so far. So that's good. I mean, that might be bad. Maybe it's fun for us and not as fun for the people listening. Who knows? But we'll see. But that was nice. And we had like three wrestlers that were on the same exact spots, which is always fun.
Okay.
And two of them was two wrestlers who literally had just had a really good match that we had both watched right before we started recording. So that's kind of funny. That's kind of been mine. Florida was Florida. I unfortunately didn't get to check out the city too much because I was pretty busy the whole time. But how you been, Pete?
Doing good. I just booked my flight for February. I'm going to go down for Action, Making Towns, and Scenic City Rumble this year. So I just booked that flight, and I'm just waiting for my boss to give me the okay for Mania Week. He's just a pain in the ass is what that guy is. Let's just wait a little bit until make sure nothing important's happening before I give you the okay type, you know?
Right.
I understand, but it's just like, okay, whatever, man.
Yeah. It feels like there's been a lot of stuff popping off in the news, obviously, because it's been like 2 weeks, but I can't think of anything that really stood out to me. I saw there was some hubbub about the Hall of Fame, but I'm so checked out on Observer that I don't even know what was going on. Was that anything exciting or anything that...
For me, it was. I was happy to see Jerry Jarrett go in, because, I mean, I haven't voted for him in the last 2-3 years.
That podcast must have helped. That podcast he's been doing, it's pretty fun, honestly, to listen to. It's kind of like the diet version of like the Bruce Pritchard or even the Ric Flair podcast with Conrad Thompson, honestly.
Right. Who else? Jimmy Hart went in, so I was happy about that because I've been voting for him for the last 3 years based on his Memphis run. Gary Hart went in, who was another guy I've been voting for, who was instrumental in Dallas, Georgia, a big key figure in Dusty Rhodes' babyface turn, which really changes the landscape of wrestling.
Might say negative that, I mean, we're going to review MLW, but he influenced Court Bauer, who books and runs MLW, so that might be a blemish on his record.
Right. But hell, even, you know, having Dusty Rhodes turn babyface... we even feel the freaking the impact now with Cody and stuff.
All of NXT. I mean, realistically, if Dusty doesn't have that legendary babyface run where he really makes his bones as a promo that goes down in the history of time, is he the head trainer for promos in NXT? You know, probably not. You know.
Yeah. So many. Like, you know, things like that. So I was really happy about seeing that three. I was glad that Kenny Omega did not go in. So they proved me wrong that I thought the voters were gonna turn a blind eye and just mark out too much for the six stars and stuff, and ignore everything else. So I was pleasantly happy about that. The luchador or the Mexico category. We only got one, but he got the most votes, and that was La Parca. No one else got in. So
I guess this year It's such a weird thing to me because it feels like he did have such a big year. I can see where people are coming from, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, this year, I don't know. I don't think it was worth it to be the thing that put him over the top to finally being a Hall of Fame guy. I feel like if you voted for him this year, you probably should have voted for him last year.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I know the Roush thing. I mean, it has a lot of big impact. It's a big draw. But, I mean, really, he's been drawing some big houses in Mexico this year. So, I mean, I can understand. But there's still, I mean, that whole Mexico category is pretty much fucked. It's such a loaded category where it's hard for all the voters. Like, I abstain from Mexico because I don't feel comfortable voting in it, even though I'm probably more, have more influence, not influence, but more. I'm probably better than a lot of people who are voting in that category, but I choose because it's such a log jam. I don't want to be the reason somebody doesn't get voted in or not. I know that might sound arrogant or whatever, but it's a category I don't feel super comfortable in.
Yeah, it's
I've avoided it through my 3 years voting.
It's a pretty fair critique that I've heard, and it's definitely true. I haven't even seen the ballot this year, but for the past 5 years or so, it's like if you vote in Mexico, you probably should turn in a ballot that's all luchadors, basically.
Yeah.
How stacked that segment is. So it's kind of really unfair for anyone to be voting in there if that's not kind of basically what they're doing.
There's so many people who are Hall of Fame worthy out of Mexico. It's ridiculous, honestly. I know you're a big proponent of Shima, right?
Shima, yeah. I mean, I'm a big proponent of him, but I didn't have him on my top 50 this year, and I don't necessarily think I would vote for him for Hall of Fame right this moment, but I think that he's a guy who's in a good, solid conversation. And I think, unfortunately, the last few years of Dragon Gate being down as much as they have been kind of in some ways hurts that the aura and the presence of that, just because he's such a big part of that company existing. But, I mean, he might also be smart in that he's abandoning ship as it's really seeming to die down a lot. But he's also, I mean, he's doing a lot. I mean, and I think that this last piece of his career is really, I think, going to be the deciding factor. I don't argue with the people who say he's already a slam dunk case. I can definitely see that. But I also think, like, I don't know, did Jun Akiyama get in yet? Like, to me,
No.
He's a more slam dunk case than Shima. And I think that depending on how the China expansion goes, realistically, that could be the big time final deciding factor. Because if he proves to put together a top drawing company in China that could be a game changer, which is very possible with how the OWE situation was going, I think that really makes a legacy that's impossible to deny.
Yeah, I mean, I voted for Akiyama and he didn't go in. I voted for Taoya in Japan. He didn't go in.
Which is the biggest travesty.
Yeah. And like Nagata went in this year, which I'm like, okay. Again, not who I don't see it, but other people see it. And obviously more people saw it than not. So, I mean, he was big in wrestlers category and stuff.
I guess that makes sense. I mean,
current wrestlers and stuff. Bill Apter going in. You know, I didn't vote for him, but I have no problem with that. Howard Finkel, I voted for him last year. I didn't vote for him this year. So I have no pride. Again, I don't really have a major problem with that. I was happy to see them get some guys who I voted for. And it's kind of showing, seeing how things are changing. And on the ballot, some of the older people who had voted in the past, I guess, according to Dave, because of health issues or stuff going on in their personal life, didn't vote this year, and that had an impact on like Jerry Jarrett going in, because he's a guy who got some slack in the past, and a lot of it was because of bad payouts from former wrestlers or people held grudges in the wrestling business not voting for him. and they might have not been healthy or they passed away, and he got that in the and brought probably the podcast probably helped him too, you know.
Yeah, I think the podcast probably helped with a lot of more modern fans getting exposed to him. Like I said, podcasting is really hot right now, obviously, and what he's the format that they're doing like is like kind of a really good kind of diet, more cool, calm headed type person's version of something like what the Conrad podcasts are like, which is cool if you're someone who's really kind of in that. You're not looking for the salacious, you're looking more for the historical details of wrestling. He had a really interesting interview with I can't remember her name now. It was like Lady whatever, doesn't matter. Steve Austin's second wife,
Lady Blossom,
that's it. Yeah. Really interesting interview, and I've heard her in other interviews, obviously, when she wrote that first book about everything. She was kind of hit the circuit, but the interview with Jerry Jarrett was so much better and so much more in-depth, just because the history that he, you know, legitimately was talking about, the respect that she had for him, and it's like stuff like that that comes through.
She broke him in, yeah.
Yeah, he broke her in, and so, yeah, it was like a big part of the story for sure that, like, she came through so much better there. And stuff like that, where people just show this deep respect for him. Plus, his recounting of historical events, the shit all seems very legit comparatively. I mean, everything is a little bit of a work, but he feels a lot more honest than, say, a Bruce Pritchard for sure.
Yes. You know?
And I don't hear people fact-checking him, and I don't keep track on that, but just based on what I know historically and the way that he talks about stuff, the shit comes across pretty legit. It's pretty cool to hear him be open, the respect that he seems to get from everyone in the business, and I get it. And when you talk about people holding historical grudges against him because of fucking over the boys on payouts, that's where that conversation that really was the final straw for me with the Observer kind of really shines, which is that the Observer is not really a journalistic newsletter about wrestling. It is a insider kind of trade paperback for the wrestlers and the wrestling business. Because in what world does a journalistic magazine Endeavor have a Hall of Fame that the influence can come from the fact that the boys think that they didn't get paid enough? How does that have anything to do with, you know, history or the facts or anything to do with wrestling? That's a personal vendetta. And the fact that he knows and allows something like that to happen just shows what service he thinks that the Observer is supposed to fill. And that's not necessarily a service that's meant for me, because I'm a wrestling fan, not a wrestler, you know? And so if you're a wrestler and you think it's cool to read this newsletter that you spent your entire career probably openly talking shit about to everyone, and now you want to vote in the Hall of Fame for it because it makes you feel good and read about the history and all this stuff, that's cool. But it just seems so odd to me that that's the fan base that Meltzer seems to service towards instead of the wrestling fans, which is just so weird, you know?
Yeah, and then we shift over, and the Elite Boys have now left Ring of Honor, and they're with that guy Khan from the Jacksonville owner, and they turned down WWE offers. Ballsy, huh?
Oh, yeah, big stuff, and really interesting. Did you watch any of Final Battle?
No, I have not. What about you?
I've watched pretty much all of it. I will say that there was stuff in there that I didn't say focus on super intently. I mean, it was good ROH stuff, but I mean, realistically, the main event, which had the Young Bucks guys in it, was just kind of ridiculous being the main event in the situation that it was. The Cody Lethal match was about as good a Cody Lethal match as they've had. I mean, those guys are pretty good together, not amazing. Gresham Sabre match felt special and awesome. Taven Dalton Castle match was rough. I mean, Castle is hurting bad, you know, so it's sad to watch that. And Jeff Cobb, Adam Page felt like the best match that they could put on, the best match that was on the show and done super well. But when half the match is in question for leaving soon, it does kind of suck because it felt like the match that was about this is the future of the company and half of the people in the match are leaving. And the other one is Jeff Cobb, who's like, while I think it's a smart move for them to push him, I feel like, honestly, he might be valued at a certain level that will be very hard to really help ROH. Like, I don't necessarily think that Jeff Cobb, even as their top guy, something that I would love, is necessarily going to help move the needle for ROH in any way. So, yeah, it's all very interesting. I mean, ROH, the whole pay-per-view felt very focused on there felt like a big looming kind of presence with the elite guys leaving. But it was also really good in a lot of ways too. Great wrestling, people that I'm excited to see more of, stuff like that, you know? So, yeah, that'll be something. I don't know. I mean, turning down WWE, people are saying nothing's official with them being gone. Really with any of the people from the elite being actually gone in ROH, like they could show back up. But I mean, it felt like this was putting the capper on it. And from what I hear from the spoilers on the TV, it really seems like it wouldn't make sense for them to show back up, but you know, it's wrestling. So who knows?
Anything can happen. I'm curious on like how the New Japan deal might play out with Ring of Honor. Will they honor, be loyal to Ring of Honor when, like, say, Kenny Omega deals up? And does he stay with New Japan? Does he go to the League guys? If he does go to the League guys, does New Japan still want him so bad that they... And you know, Japan history is they're a very loyal company. Will they leave Ring of Honor just to work with the guys they've worked with for years, too? Who knows?
Yeah,
I think Kenny Omega, I think, is the X factor here. Honestly, I feel they really, really respect Omega as a draw.
Yeah, and he is a draw for them, and he's a guy that they care about. But also, I think he's a guy that they could do without. You know, they don't need him that bad. So it's tough to say. I mean, it's about ROH, how they feel. Could be a Hulk Hogan situation with WWE and New Japan and All Japan kind of situation. That'd be kind of crazy to think of, but it wouldn't be unheard of. But it's like, is Omega to the level of Hulk Hogan? Not exactly, but I mean, maybe to Japan they think that he
maybe
is.
Now I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, to me, him dropping the belt to Tanahashi makes the most sense at Wrestle Kingdom, and I think that it honestly takes away pretty much any leverage that he has, because, like, you know, he won't have the championship. And I think that New Japan does okay with Omega gone. And he's kind of the only guy out of the elite people that are really, you know, the linchpin of anything with New Japan. Even Ibushi, I think. I don't know how entrenched he is.
And he's intertwined with Omega, too.
Right, but he also doesn't... He feels like a guy that's nice for New Japan to have, but they haven't invested in him to the point where they need him. And
right.
The weirdest part about the whole thing is they leave, and then that can open up Kenny and Ibushi going back to DDT pretty easily, but what's the deal with DDT and Evolve and WWE and NXT? You know, that's up in the air too, but it doesn't seem like there's much there. But, you know, that is still something to think about, but... I could see them showing back up in DDT pretty easily if they have time in between. They want to work in Japan in between the All Elite Wrestling. Like, that makes perfect sense, honestly. I think the landscape in DDT is so different now that they could actually show up and have a lot of fresh matchups. DDT is a company where you can do kind of what they do a lot better, obviously, with going from singles to tag, but still being taken seriously in both, unlike New Japan, where it kind of feels like if you're in a tag group, you get devalued in a big way. So, yeah, I mean, I think that they pretty seamlessly leave. But that also depends, like, how invested is Kenny Omega in the whole thing to begin with? He comes across always kind of not necessarily 100% in it, you know, with the Young Bucks and with Cody. They seem a lot more committed to the whole thing than he does, you know?
Those guys seem thicker than thieves, yeah. And Hangman Page, too.
Yeah. Scroll Page, yeah.
Yeah, and I was surprised Scroll. He's going to be with Ring of Honor, and he didn't leave. Obviously, I guess their contracts were timing was different, I'm assuming.
Yeah, the news that I heard is him and Page have different contracts, and Page is done sooner. Scroll is done in a little bit. And I think it's kind of smart what they're doing. I don't know if you saw the spoilers. I'll put them out there from the TV tapings.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, go on though.
Yeah, it's all over the place. But they put Brody King, who already is a tag team champion in Australia with Marty Scurll, together with PCO in ROH as Villain Enterprises, the same name of the aforementioned tag team, in ROH, and it makes sense. I mean, you're just basically taking a guy who's pretty over in Marty Scurll and just sprinkling, you know, a little of that Scurll dust on him, and helping to like transition that overness to new guys that you're just bringing in. And I get people who question it because it is a little odd to have PCO in there. He doesn't necessarily fit everything perfectly, but I think it makes sense, and I think it works. Like, I think it's probably a smart move for them. And then one
scroll. And you know what? I mean, the dynamic works having Scroll as the lead, and having King and PCO as his muscle, too.
Yeah, two big, you know, twin Colossuses is perfect for the little guy. Yeah, exactly.
And then Bandito, totally, I mean, the elite guy felt like he was going with them, and he swerved him and signed with Ring of Honor.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one, too, because it harkens back to the publicly talked about and press released working relationship between PWG and ROH. Because, you know, people were talking about that with Jeff Cobb and Bola. Because I was saying, I mean, from pretty early on when Matt Riddle got pulled, I said, I think that Jeff Cobb is going to win Bola this year. And I think it's realistically because he's in place of Matt Riddle, who was probably going to be the winner. And then he, you know, people go on to say, well, he signed with ROH now, so they are not going to be able to have the title match for sure because come January, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, you know, it's not even January yet, and he's already won the PWG championship after winning Bola. And it does feel like, is that related to the fact that he signed to ROH and there is a PWG-ROH connection? Does that connection still exist with the Young Bucks splintering off into doing their own thing, seeing as they're... You know, people think that they're part of the office for PWG. They're not technically, but a lot of people believe that. So it does, like, where is that? Does that connection still stand strong? Does PCO, Marty Scurll, Bandito being super over in PWG, does that all connect to, ROH picked him up and he's part of picking it up is that he knows he's going to get to continue working in PWG, which is becoming probably a big time bread and butter place for him with just the amount of money that he gets in tips. I mean, people throw fucking money and cash into the ring for him every match. So I can't imagine that the paydays are not too, you know, not too nice for him for PWG. He may not be getting paid from the company, but I bet the merch and the tips. The marks
are taking care of him.
Yeah. So all that is probably really helping him out. He sells masks out the fucking ass. And those things are not cheap, even the shitty replica ones, but then he's also selling the ring-worn ones, you know? So he's making a pretty penny there. So I wouldn't be shocked if that's part of it. The Bandito, PWG, ROH thing is still part of it. And who knows what goes on with kind of that whole connection with the Young Bucks being so intertwined with every part of it. We had just recently had PWG Splinter. I mean, Joey Ryan left, and now he's in Bar Wrestling, running shows literally a block from my apartment, which is pretty awesome with the caliber of talent that he's bringing. It's like a 5
except
minute
he's on it.
That's probably the biggest problem is that he's on the shows, but I mean he's booking Jungle Boy versus Eli Everfly and just a banger of a high flyer match a couple days ago. Him splintering off, and it just seems like, you know, doesn't matter, all the wrestlers still work all the shows, nothing, not a big deal, the community is supporting it, so who knows what happens here. It seems like Excalibur shows up doing commentary in New Japan. So where does that connect? PWG, ROH, New Japan. I don't know, man. Everything is very fucking weird.
Muddled.
Yeah, there's
Either way, the elite, I mean, four wrestlers don't make it a promotion. So they got to find TV. So they have a lot ahead of them, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I mean, you got four wrestlers, but you got the Young Bucks, so that's one match already tied up with two of your four. And I don't think we want to see that Young Bucks singles run. It was not very good last time they tried it.
Yeah, and well, we'll talk about later about tag team single runs not really clicking. All right, well, let's just get into it then, man. Anything else, or do you want to get right into it?
Yeah, let's get into it. I like all right. Right into it at this point.
Yeah, we're at ML Fusion number 35, and we open up with Promotion Doug Whatever attacking Team Filthy. This was a fun little angle, huh?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought this was done pretty well. It was, you know, they're all in the limo and Filthy comes out of nowhere to attack them. Actually, this is the first one, and it's kind of NWO-esque, even with the lawn darting.
Yeah, very NWO-esque, yeah.
Yeah,
straight out, cool. Straight Ray doing they're doing the old lawn dart with Ray, but Ray wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we get a middleweight title match. Or vacant, I guess it's vacant because of MLW's, MJF's injury. We get Gringo Loco, who doesn't even get an entrance. So I feel safe to say he would not be winning it. Odell, LA Park, Coto Brazil, Desmond Xavier, but then Teddy Hart takes him out. Oh, but he's still in the match. I really wish they'd be more just a little when they're cheating and using ladder, using stuff. I just wish they'd be a little bit more creative and somehow misdirecting the referee. I mean, I guess it's okay during a ladder match. Teddy Hart winning. I don't know. I don't know if he's a face or if he's a heel. I don't know what the hell he is. So that's a problem to me. Taking out Coto Brazil early, I thought it was going to be a more of a interesting narrative. Are you still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I just see my computer doing something weird. It's just a little, it just didn't really do much for me. I went 2.5. Nothing really stood out to me. I mean, there were some cool spots, of course, and they've had big moves and big dives, but I didn't think there wasn't like a connective tissue to anything, and I really didn't see much of a story going on. But hey, what did you think?
Of course not. Of course you didn't see any fucking story. Teddy Hart, I mean, this match, 2.5 stars is probably fair for the action and what they did. But this match was dumb as hell. These guys, this booking was fucking pointless and convoluted. And I would deign to guess, I would throw this out there as just a kind of a pet theory that Teddy Hart mixed up which black guy he was supposed to attack before the match. Because they are almost telling a story that he disables Desmond Xavier before the match to get his spot in there. But then Coto Brazil goes for a dive, and then El Hijo de Park comes out, and I guess probably to try to save the angle, attacks Coto Brazil and puts him out of the match for good with the leg attack. So it's like, it's very confusing. Why would you do both back to back? Why would you tease that you're injuring out Desmond only to then injure out the other guy? Like, I really think that Teddy fucked that up, and he was supposed to attack Coto to set up the storyline that Coto is out of the match and he's replacing him, but he attacked the wrong guy to begin with.
That's an interesting take, I'll say that.
Yeah, I legitimately would not say that that's out of the realm of question, especially with Teddy Hart, who is probably the shittiest, worst wrestler going. He's beating out Marcus Crane now after I've done my top 50, this is officially the start of the 2019 year, and Teddy Hart is running away with worst wrestler of the year already. This guy, the biggest problem to me is, like you said, can't tell if he's a heel or a babyface because he makes no fucking facials.
Yeah.
His entire act is doing stuff and then trying to stoically look at the crowd as if, like, how cool am I that I just did that? Instead of being like, ooh, that was super cool. Like, that was exciting. Or, oh, man, that was tough. Or, oh, I'm excited. It's all just about trying to, like, look super cool and not smile and show no emotion in his face. Like, to me, it's not even the lack of charisma or lack of kind of character that people say about some wrestlers. It's, like, in defiance of. It feels like Teddy Hart goes out of his way to try to intentionally show literally zero emotion. And it makes it so that I can't give a shit about wrestling. And, like, it's just so bad. So, yeah, the ladder match, everything that happened, probably fine. The booking, the idea
And they've booked Teddy Hart now to just beat up a bunch of black guys so far.
Yes, that's all he does.
And an old man. That's so far what he's beat up.
Yes, it's fucking ridiculous. Teddy Hart is terrible. And I think he might have fucked up this match, or they booked it so badly that they, like, confused you from the start. And then with everybody in this match, why the fuck would Teddy Hart win? I would have taken Gringo Loco winning over Teddy Hart, honestly, because at least Gringo Loco, maybe you could get something out of him someday. I don't think that there's anything. I think we've already tried to tap the well of Teddy Hart, and it's dry. It's been dry from the beginning. I don't think that there's any
that thing was like, minimum 4 years ago.
Yes.
If not longer. I you know, honestly, I thought the story was going to be after Coto got hurt, how valiantly he was going to fight back and win. And
he
not
made
even.
The most sense. He, honestly, to me, Coto made the most sense to win the title. Second, I would have given it to fucking Desmond just because I think Desmond's great personally. Yeah. And then, like I said, Hijo de L.A. Park, fine. Even fucking Gringo Loco. But Teddy Hart? What the fuck?
He's just tight with Bauer, obviously. And he, I think he likes that Hart Foundation crew. But, man, it's terrible. Jesus, yeah. All right. And then we get Tom Lawler. They want to interview him, but he blows off the interviewer. So, good.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pissed, right?
Yep. Tom's the man. I mean, realistically, I think 2019 is Tom's year. As long as, you know, they let him work a couple other places. I hope, hopefully he can get out a little bit more than MLW, but realistically, yeah, I mean, he's got it. And 2008 is his year to break out. Or 2009.
And then we get a Dragon Lee versus DJZ match that, God, I was really disappointed in. Again, I thought these guys, I think, are potentially could tear the house down. And it didn't come close to me. I gave it 2 3/4. I mean, we got some mirror match sequences early on, and then we got, then later on, they're doing other mirror spots. And, I was not, color me not impressed, and I like both guys. But, what about you?
Yeah, I felt that the early, or the Ingo Bernabéu's pose mirror spot was a little bit too forced.
Yo, way forced. Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, it was not necessary. It was interesting because I thought about it, and Dragon Lee was a guy that was on his way to breaking out for me this year. Earlier on in the year, I thought he was having a lot of really good matches. And then by the end of the year, I just completely forgot about him. So, yeah, it was just kind of rough. But then I think they mentioned he's CMLL light heavyweight champion, but it's like, you know, he doesn't really ever defend that. Because I was thinking, like, where did he go? Like, why did he disappear so much? Because it felt like this was going to be a year where he's going to have a good amount of matches outside of Mexico and kind of show off how good he is. But he then disappeared kind of halfway through the year. And I think, you know, he's focusing, I guess, on CMLL. But even then, he didn't have a lot of matches.
Well, he's there. I mean, he was in Ring of Honor. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, I haven't watched much Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
He's been popping up here, popping up there. Yeah, it's just not. Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, early in the year, he was standing out to me. And then
we got a lot of him in New Japan for a bit.
Yeah, in the Best of the Super Juniors, he was pretty good, but I think not great there. And so, yeah, so he, you know, he shows up here. DJ's, I don't know where you're at on DJZ, but I think pretty good, but a guy who a certain segment of the fan base kind of overhype him. One of the most egregious parts of it is TJ Hawk, who, you know, is maybe a pet kind of a pet peeve of this podcast, but not necessarily like in a terrible way, but I just, you know, I've seen him shout out DJZ as like a confirmed good match guy, like a guy that you always, and I don't really see that. Like I think he's had some good matches. I think he's a pretty solid performer, but I don't think he's like a, if I know that DJZ is having a match, I expect it to be very good. Like that's not kind of my feeling on him. So this was solid, but the forced mirror spots, the back and forth was a bit much. It really kind of hit all the negatives of both guys pretty solidly in their wheelhouse for what the issues are with both of them.
Yep. Then we get Lawler attacking Promotion Delgado one on four. I kind of like this. What about you?
Yeah, I thought this was great. It was like, Lawler being epic stupid guy. I love that. There's a certain, you know, it's kind of popularly talked about by Felix Biederman, but with Tom Lawler being an MMA guy to match that kind of stereotype, it totally works. You know, the guy who shows up in flip-flops and he's like, yeah, you know what, fuck you, like I would have fucked up all four of those guys if I didn't slip in the gravel. Like that's kind of the feeling that you have from Tom Lawler here. Is like, there was I didn't know there was rocks and I was wearing flip-flops and that's why I would have fucked them up though. Like that's kind of the vibe that you get there. It's kind of perfect for Tom Lawler.
Then we get Pillman Jr. talking about winning Rookie of the Year, right?
Yeah, this is kind of dumb but kind of fun. I thought Pillman was good here, but I thought he was fun. Teddy Hart was like so bad. Like I felt like they really should have tried to hammer home that the plaque was fake, but Lawler is Teddy Hart is so bad at it that like you don't really, he comes across like it's just real, like it's just the real plaque, but he should have been playing it up a little bit to like make it clear like this is all bullshit, you know.
What do you think of the Simon Gotch interview?
It was fine. It was, the only thing was I was more focused on trying to figure out where he was, because they mentioned that he was at his house in California, so I was trying to figure out where he was at, because he lives somewhere here in Southern California, but I did not recognize it. But the promo was fine. I mean, I don't think that Simon Gotch is like a top level promo, but it worked, you know, it was good for what
it's
they're
good
telling.
Enough for what he is, yeah.
Yeah, especially because he's a setup, but like a kind of a cool former friend setup for the guy who really is the top guy. So he was fine for what he's supposed to be.
Yeah. Then we got Rouge versus Swan, match I never wanted to see. I guess it was okay. Again, nothing special.
Yeah,
it was kind of like the theme of the show, just matches that, for the most part, I didn't care about, and they didn't suck me in either. I got excited about L.A. Park versus Rouge Mania Week, but we've already booked tickets elsewhere, so that's not on the agenda. I would like to see that match live, but I'll survive. What about you? What did you think of Rouge and Swan?
Yeah, that probably would be the fun of that match, of seeing it live, obviously, just because of the way that they go. Again, another head-scratcher for the booking decisions of MLW. I don't know why you do the first debut Rouge match against Sammy Guevara to then set up to Rich Swann the next week. You know what I mean? That's not the way I do it. Find it interesting that they were able to book Sammy Guevara versus Rouge even in that match. I mean, even with Rouge winning, I mean,
yeah, CMLL versus AAA, whatever Guevara belt he has.
Yeah, Guevara has a lower weight title, and Rouge is pushed as a top heavyweight guy, so you wouldn't even think that CMLL would want their heavyweight wrestling a lower weight guy, even if it is their champion, and even if he beats him, it would seem like they wouldn't even want him having a competitive match with a lower weight guy. But it was a good match. Like, I don't know if you watched it, but I actually enjoyed it, and I wouldn't have had that be the setup for then the Rich Swann match. That seems backwards to me. I would have done the Rich Swann match first and then set up for the Guevara match, especially if you could get the Guevara match live here. Maybe that's the issue, is they couldn't get Guevara to show up on the live show. But
yeah,
either way, I think that would have made more sense. So yeah, I mean, the match was what it was. I think they're doing a good job of presenting Rouge as a star. The post-match was done pretty well, but it felt a little bit forced, especially with Loki talking about live TV, and then what's going on doesn't really feel like it's a big thing because it's live, you know?
And the part of me is like, well, then at least we'll see Park and Rouge on this thing, because it's a fusion taping. Then I'm not going to see live, but it's like one of those legendary feuds in a way that only takes place, you know, usually in Mexico. So it really is. I think it's a really a smart novelty match that they're booking. I'll tell you that, though.
Yeah, they did a good job. That's a smart match to book to try to draw some crowds at the WrestleMania weekend. I think people will show up for that.
Oh yeah. Overall, I'm not impressed with this show. Started out hot with that cool angle and then kind of fell off a cliff, huh?
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, it's pretty MLW-centric style stuff. I mean, MLW is just not – it's really just not done super well. There's some interesting people, but the booking and the matches are not, like, you know, anything to write home about.
Yeah, and then we moved over to NXT UK 17. I'll tell you, brother, these NXT UK shows are getting, like, almost zero buzz. I'm seeing no, like – yeah, and I understand for the U.S., I mean, it's happening – during the daytime on a Wednesday, right? But maybe I don't have a lot of followers or who are from in the UK scene, but I'm not seeing any like live tweeting while it's happening, huh? What about you?
No. I mean, no. There's not a lot of people getting super into it, and I mean, obviously, it's not getting a lot of buzz. I think they're starting to really break off from the idea of like that the main events are super good, which they were for a minute. Like, we're starting to get more and more kind of acceptable level main events.
Just more streamlined. So far, the only act to me who's gotten super over has been Mustache Mountain. to the next level, I think you have like Dunn and Zach Gibson.
Yeah, the Gibson stuff too. I mean, I didn't think it was possible for the UK crowds to get more unbearable, but they're getting to the point with the Gibson stuff that it's like really, really cringy and like honestly hurting Zach Gibson as a heel for me. Just because of how strongly it felt like he was over, and now it just feels like the crowd is into their shtick more than they are into actually hating him.
Yeah. I can see that.
So, yeah, so even talking about him on that second level, it's like he's one of the few people who was doing really well to begin with, but already is now starting to feel devalued in NXT UK compared to outside, and that's really more because of the crowd.
And they've been trying really hard to push Wolfgang and the Coffees, and they come up with that Gallus. Is that Gallus?
Yeah, that name and that music sucks. I don't like the music either. Like the whole
Yeah, God.
It's not great, man.
It's really terrible. Yeah, it feels... I don't know. They feel like a low level sanity to me. It's just.
And it's wearing. Know. It's wearing on me because it is two episodes every week, which I think we both can agree is not helping. There's, you know, what else is kind of tough is the color palette. Like this is, might seem dumb to some people, but it's very drab to me how much everything is black and red. Everyone's gear is black and red, all the colors are black and red, most of the Titantrons are black and red, you know, the ring is black and red. It feels like everything is black and red, and like I don't know, it just doesn't, it really just feels super samey to start seeing how like everything is just in the same tone. The crowd kind of reacts the same way, a lot of the pushes feel very similar. So, yeah, it is just becoming...
Yeah, the chants were, like, I don't want to say I've never been adorable, but they've been fun at times. Now they're just fucking annoying.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you've been exposed to it way too much.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, especially, like I said, the Gibson stuff. The shoes off thing is becoming too much. I get that it's fun, but you can't keep going to that, you know?
Yeah, you know, because they have so few acts that are over... Do you then use that those acts and to put other people over to try to get them elevated? I don't know. I mean,
it feels like the over acts are kind of the nucleus of the brand, and they don't really. I don't really think they have anybody else signed or committed in a way that would make sense to put any investment in, really.
Yeah.
So it's like that's a tough one too. It's like to me, I'm like, yeah, I get where you're coming from, but I also like, I don't see who you try to put over more other than maybe Jordan Devlin, but he also feels like he's probably pretty focused on to a point where you don't really need to put much more steam on him realistically. Yeah. And like otherwise I don't really see a lot of guys. I mean, I guess they could, but I don't know if this would get over too. Like they could do more like straight up job matches, and then like really anybody who they put any steam behind gets mostly only job matches, but I don't think they would do that, you know.
And yeah, and then, like, one thing with the other NXT is at least they cycle out talent, and you get, there's, like, a shuffling of the deck every few months. Here, I don't know what they're going to do. Obviously, I don't think they're going to be bringing in new talent regularly and freshening it up. Do you?
I would hope, but, yeah, I mean, they don't. That's the other thing about this is, like, even you talk about NXT, but there's even talk of people recently saying, like, is NXT kind of stale for the first time in a long time because of the lack of cycling talent? And, I mean, that's not a crazy thing. So then, yeah, you're adding in this brand, and what's the plan with this brand, really? Because you don't even have as clear of a streamlined pathway to what happens. So
now I like what you just said. I'll say certain acts on the NXT regular NXT roster are stale, or they don't know what the fuck to do with them because they've been there too long.
Yeah, the top of the card has some guys that are kind of stale. Like there is, you know, it's true.
Yeah, and whatever, we'll talk about the fucked up booking decision later on. But let's get into this fucking episode. We get Jordan Devlin versus the Wild Boar, huh?
Yeah. Interesting stuff here. Like I said with Devlin, I think a good match to showcase him. Really thinking about it with Boar, he is kind of one of the guys that I was talking about when I said that. Like a guy that you could have him just have job matches, maybe. That would be a way to put some focus on him a little bit more. But realistically, it feels like, you know, I personally am a big fan of Boar, and I think that he could get over more, but also I kind of accept that maybe he couldn't. So
yeah. And Wild Boar, to me, feels like he could be that lovable underdog, maybe like a Balls Mahoney type of character.
Yeah. I think in a like worst case scenario, Balls Mahoney type guy, best case scenario, Mick Foley type guy. Like,
yeah,
he can be that lovable freak, you know, and yeah, it would just depend on how he's used. But realistically, it feels like they put some, but yeah, like I could see not having him job here to Devlin, but you know, again, he's that, I don't know that they're at that level of having enough guys to do something like that. So the match here was good. I think Devlin's on his way, but like after that really great match with Pete Dunne, this does feel like a step, even though he wins, it feels like a cool off and a step backwards for him.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what's next for him, you know?
Yeah, and it does, it speaks to the staleness and the idea that you're already having guys on the show who feel like they're, you don't know what the clear next step is for them.
Exactly. And you know, like, Wild Boar is a guy, though, I think they can do vignettes, even do similar ones to the old Bull James ones that got him over. Then he eventually got fired, ended up getting fired anyway, but at least, I think the Wild Boar character has some legs to it. Then what happened here? We have Mustache Mountain interview?
Yeah, Mustache Mountain walk and talk. You got Trent Seven in this weird, like, abstract art camouflage silk shirt, just looking ridiculous. And I mean, obviously these guys have a lot of charisma, and and it comes through even here. Seven, again, we talked about it before, a guy who can kind of bullshit his way through life and does pretty well at it, so you know, solid stuff.
Then we get Fabian Aichner versus the English Lion. I like that name, the English Lion. And I like Aichner. He's getting over as a heel for me. This thing worked for me. What about you?
Yeah, this Aichner character is interesting. I think they've done a good job transitioning him onto TV in a way. It's funny because with the way stuff is moving, it's like, how was this even connected to anything in any way? Maybe it was part of the plan, maybe it wasn't, but him showing up and winning the Evolve title, also adds a little bit mystique to kind of watching what he does here. And he's taking to this character really well, I think. Transitioning into being more of a big man, more of a bruiser, and a heel is working for him. He's really cut back on the high flying and is really just putting it down with some nice hard
hits. The one thing that's not working for me is they've kind of made him a dummy where he's feuding with a tag team but separately. And it's one on two, so he just looks like a dum-dum, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, I think they do tease.
I know he's going to end up with a partner, but it's just weird seeing the heel. Because in professional wrestling, it's usually the two heels who beat up a babyface, and the babyface gets his partner. This is like ass backwards. And then that scenario works better than this scenario. Travis Banks vignette. Good stuff, right?
Yeah, solid stuff. Feels like something they should have sewn earlier just to get him over a little bit more before you've seen him. But, you know, it is what it is.
And then we get a Mustache Mountain versus Tyson T-Bone and Saxon Huxley match. What'd you think of it?
It was interesting. I don't know if you saw that they did a vignette, I think, on the last week episodes of these two guys joining up as a team.
Yeah.
To show that they wanted to prove that they could do whatever. Odd to me to then just have them lose, but I guess it still makes sense with what you're trying to do with Trent Seven and Mustache Mountain, obviously. I mean, I don't see much in Huxley, so I don't see a point in protecting him, so it's okay to have him lose, but it just seemed like really kind of, you can't get away with this stuff too much where you try to hype up a team without actually having them do anything and then just lose.
Yeah.
Or else then the people just don't buy into your hype. You know, it's I can't remember who it was, but there's a promoter who like kind of said that, like, you want to save your lies for when they count and try to be as honest as you can for the most part.
Yeah, there you go. Know,
and this feels like something where you're kind of doing a lie that you didn't need, even if it's not like a completely a lie, but doing a vignette where it's like, take these guys seriously only to have them do nothing is a little bit of just like making people feel like you let them down.
Yeah, it almost feels like here we go. We put them together. We did a vignette, therefore it's important. And then you job them out.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we get this Dave Mastiff interview, but he's attacked by Eddie Dennis. They said their previous match was super violent. I didn't see it. How violent was it?
No, it wasn't violent really at all. Honestly, okay. I wouldn't describe it.
When
as
I heard that, I'm like, okay, I doubted this.
There was not much to it. I mean, it was fine, and I thought that they did a pretty good job with having them be the two juggernauts clashing. They kept it pretty simple, but violent is not the way I would really describe it. Yeah, I wouldn't like over the top say it was this big thing.
And then I'm watching Rhea Ripley walk the hall, and I gotta say, man, her and Pete Dunne might have the same hairstylist because they looked eerily similar when they were walking down the hallway.
That's so funny. Oh my God. Rich Fan from The Torch told me that he likes to poke fun at his co-host on the East Coast cast about Pete Dunne and Rhea Ripley looking the same, because I guess his co-host really likes Ripley but hates Pete Dunne. So yeah, it's so funny that you mentioned that. Yeah, they do have a similar... I could definitely see it. They have a similar swagger, similar demeanor, but me...
I could totally buy him as brother or sister.
I was going to say, but me being like a in the same vein of like subtle ginger kind of guy, which I did have... It was only a couple months ago, but it was a big-time revelation for me, as I've spent my entire life saying I'm not a redhead because I don't have red hair. And then someone said to me, your beard is on your head. And I was like, fuck, I do have... a red beard that's on my head. Yeah. So being in the same vein, I can see the differences because I'm within that class. I'm within that family of the like subtly rosy colored people. But yeah, I can definitely see they have like a similarness to them.
And then that leads us into, Ripley and Isla Dawn. I'll say, I thought Ripley threw a really great drop kick. And I thought Ripley sold her arm really well. But again, I didn't really care about the match. Didn't do a lot for me. What about you?
Yeah, I think that they did a good job building up Isla Dawn as someone who I did not take seriously at all up until this, really. The build that they did here, she's someone I've known about. She got trained by Aleister Black, so obviously I've been exposed to her being a big Aleister Black fan when he was on the indies and in Europe still. So I knew who she was. I was familiar with her work. I'd seen her here and there, but I didn't necessarily. I think she's fine, has a good look, and is presentable and marketable. And I think that they did a good job building her with the matches and the angles and stuff that they've done the past couple of weeks coming into this. I'm with you that I thought Ripley really served her role well, but it really felt like a token title defense. And I hate to say it, but it's like, you know, you look at the legendary historic title runs of modern vintage. Let's not go back forever, but I think one that probably a lot of people think of is the Samoa Joe ROH title run that everyone, you know, obviously I think is pretty universally loved by most people. And it was kind of he wasn't the first champion, but he was an early champion who established the title, and he didn't have a lot of title matches that felt like filler or padding just to get defenses on his record. He really felt like every one of his title matches mattered. And unfortunately, this match felt more like it was a filler title defense that she just had with a girl that they did a pretty good job of building up for this, but isn't necessarily a big time credible threat. And so I just think that like this being her first title defense was probably a poor decision on their part for this being it, you know, because as you really kind of set her title reign off at a bad kind of concept of what the reign is going to be like.
Yeah, and I thought this show was dreadful. Didn't like anything for the most part. What about you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you there. Was not a huge fan of this episode. I'd still watch NXT UK this week, this episode, before I would watch MLW by choice. You know what I mean? So it's not the worst thing, but yeah, it was not great.
And then we get into NXT number 18 UK version. And We open up with, where are we at? Tony Storm versus Charlie Morgan. They're almost similar characters. One's blonde and one's a brunette. What do you think of this match?
It was good for what it was. I thought that Tony... I feel like in some ways Tony is not as comfortable and, I don't know, not as good here at portraying her character so far.
Yeah.
Especially in this match. She's losing some of the edge that I thought made her actually kind of cool and badass. Then on the opposite side, I think I'm actually liking Charlie Morgan more in NXT UK than I did on the indies up until this point. Really feel like probably because of the level that she's being presented at in NXT UK, she kind of fits and works to this level and then sometimes works above it slightly more than she did, like even in Eve, where she was presented as like the champion and a big deal. Progress, where she's presented as kind of not as high, but more kind of in the important mix. So it was kind of the opposites there, where one feels like they're a little bit better here and one feels like they're a little bit worse, but the match still is not, not like a top level kind of outing for either of them.
Then we get a Gauss and a vignette, and man, I just hate this fucking name. Hate it. What about you?
Yeah, don't like the name. Don't
Gauss, Gauss, whatever they want to call it.
I don't like the vignette. I don't like the background stuff. These guys are pretty good, especially Coffee. I'm really settling into Coffee. I kind of am okay with the Gallus name, just so that you have it, not the name itself, but them having a separate name. I liked the idea because it helps when you put Wolfgang and Mark Coffee together to have a team name for them, so that it doesn't feel as glaring that it's not the Coffee Brothers as the tag team anymore, which seems like that's going to be the future moving forward. So I do kind of like I think it's smart that they gave the group a name. I'll do that, but they could have picked a much better name.
Agreed. Then we get Flash Morgan Webster and Andrews versus Drake and Gibson. Drake and Gibson come out as one because they're a tag team. Flash Morgan Webster and Andrews are a tag team. They come out separately. If you're trying to get teams over for the tag team tournament, present them like teams, okay? I can't stand that. I like the heels getting the heat early. They're working like heels. Love the heel double team. Looks hurty as hell. Flashy, but still heelish. Nice stooge spot to set up the hot tag. Might have been a little overkill, though. Andrews was on fire till I forget where they cut him in. Then they killed him, and they set up a second heat on him. Andrews squeezed out a tag. Gibson should have been DQ'd for the over-the-top throw. Aichner's in. I thought this was an overdone finish. Post-match, Aichner attacks, but gets run off, which is okay. But overall, it was there 2 3/4. Good, solid tag, but was missing a spark. What'd you make of it?
I'm pretty much solidly with you in that feeling. That was kind of the takeaway for me of the match, is that it was missing something that made it feel good. And I talked about it. I mean, the guys who feel like they're a step down here, the wrestlers who feel like they're a step down here compared to on the indies, like Mark Andrews is one of them. I mean, he's a guy who you could really get invested in his babyface selling on the indies pretty well. But here especially, I mean, I just don't get into it as much. He just feels like he's hampered slightly by the formatting. This is, you know, like I said, the Gibson stuff. The crowd is just fucking annoying as all hell. They're just all about having their dumb fun doing the little stuff that they're doing. The post-match attack beatdown stuff was all, yeah, like very contrived. It makes Aichner look like an idiot. And the, like, I don't know, the heated up baby face who runs into the rope. Like, I don't know, it just felt so corny watching Webster and Andrews do the thing where they like they're charging at the guy who's on the floor and they run into the ropes a little bit because they're just so fired up that they forget that the ropes are in the way. You know, it's just it's done over the top to the point where it just looks so goofy. And it looks so contrived. Like you're just trying it feels like they're just doing it because it's a thing that you do. And it's just that's when it's like just stop. There's certain things, especially in wrestling, where you get to a certain generation where people forget like kind of the reasoning behind something, and it just turns into like a thing that you do because that's how you do wrestling, and not really understanding like what's the basis of this and where's the connection to the real world of this. It's just going through the motions of doing the actions that you do in wrestling, and that was one that really was glaring to me that just felt so silly at this point that it was just it just looked dumb.
Then we get Nina Samuels getting her first win, right?
Yeah, against Killer Kelly. I was worried that Nina Samuels was going to lose here because I felt like she shouldn't lose in this situation, so I was happy that she won.
Yeah, ditto. And then we get an Aichner interview, and he's looking for a partner. Again, like, you know, the setup is all ass backwards, but what... You know, it's hard to get it's hard to invest in a heel looking for a partner, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm excited. Oh, I'm so excited to see who's he gonna pick.
Yeah, and then they can really beat up Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster.
They can really be a dick. I'm so excited to see this asshole win when he finds another asshole to tag with.
Exactly. Travis Banks for Joe Coffey. I thought it was good. Good fight to start. Settles down and Coffey's after the shoulder with kicks and other holds. Coffey's arm work is very assertive. Dome divorce court was just great. Bank stuff looks over according to Senior. He said, and I like how Bank's selling the arm. Big toe pay by Banks. I liked it because Coffey played it up big when he was on top and beat him up. And once Banks got going, he was able to fight back and get the Duke. I liked. Oh no, Banks lost, didn't he?
Yeah, Banks loses to Coffey.
Yeah, but I liked it. I mean, I understand they're pushing the Gayless group strong, so they. Putting Banks had to do the job. What'd you make of the match?
Yeah, I liked the match. It felt, you know, slightly toned down from like an epic Travis Banks title defense type match from Fight Club Pro or something. But it was really good. It felt like it was put together really well. His selling was awesome. His fire is awesome. Travis Banks looked good here. I was having like a little bit of a debate in my head earlier today about the idea that like maybe Travis Banks kind of was best in the South Pacific Power Trip as kind of like the more serious of a slightly comedy tag team that did some goofy stuff, but also did some cool spot stuff. And then also like kind of doing some comedy stuff in Attack and stuff like that. But, and then in showings like this, he does show that he can go as like a serious top level guy. So we'll just have to see moving forward what he goes with. I think Coffey is actually one of the most impressive, kind of showings from the talent level in the NXT UK, just how he's matured, how he feels like a star, how he carries himself. Everything feels epic and pretty big. Like you said, works really big when he's on top. So yeah, he's coming together really nicely for them in a way that was impressive. It's just funny. I'm thinking about it. It's like all the stuff in ICW and it's like no one pays attention. And then I remember he came over and did like a dark match in Evolve. And it's weird to think like how was that related to kind of them taking him seriously as someone that they would use in NXT UK? Was that like kind of starts of the teasing of that they were going to use him? Maybe he was, you know, going to get a tryout and then maybe move to NXT, but then this kind of all came together. So just very interesting to think kind of how his trajectory has gone, just because he's been clearly someone that they're focused on, and clearly actually probably a smart move on their part focusing on him.
Fair enough. I'd have to give it thumbs in the middle. I enjoyed the main event, but for the most part, a lot of misses to me. What about you?
Yeah, I liked this episode better than the episode before, but still not a super exciting, super hot episode. But yeah, the main event was really good.
Yep. And that moves us over to NXT proper. And we open up with this tag, which I was kind of surprised we got, which is Lo Xiar, Dakota Kai, versus Maria Shift and Jasmine Duke. I'll say it again. I really think Dakota might be the best pure babyface in the company right now. She has the potential to be the next Bayley, but better. She
I'm
has
serious.
This, yeah, exactly. She has a way to. She connects to the crowd. Connects to the kids. Looking at it, I thought Shafir. Maria Shift. I thought Shafir. It has a huge upside.
Yeah.
Duke has some work to do. I thought Dakota was very strong as a face in peril. And I thought Lo was an incredible hot tag. I mean, Ira, I'm sorry.
Io.
Yeah, okay. Is a great hot tag. That was a decent tag match. The horsewomen are a little green still. But their look, I'm not sold on their look. but I believe in a shift as an upside to her. What'd you make of everything here?
Yeah, I'm pretty in line with everything you said there. I think when the Psychology is Dead top 50 match or wrestlers comes out, you'll hear my takes, but very similar for Dakota Kai there. I'm with you. I think that the look, especially for the Four Horsemen, especially for Jessamine, doesn't work. I don't think she looks good in the tights, the trunks style tights. I think shorts or something along those lines might look better for her.
Yeah.
It's a fucking aesthetic business.
I'm
allowed to talk about people's clothes. so yeah, I just think
they look like hand-me-downs almost.
Yeah, it didn't fit her right. Shafir, I think you're right. Shafir has more of a natural kind of inclination to it. Io, obviously fantastic in the hot tag. So, I mean, it was weird to see this match on TV. I'm with you. I think this is too soon for them to be on TV, really. But I think that it was about what you would expect. The Four Horsewomen girls look like potential and possible stars, while the super solid wrestlers kind of carry the match into being pretty good. I mean, this was not a revelation. This was not, oh my God, you know, they knocked it out of the park so amazingly in their first time out there or something like Ronda, but exactly what you should and would and realistically would expect from it is what it was.
Then we get this, we get, you know, Donovan Dijakovic vignette. I guess they're trying to make him a foreign monster.
Yeah, I guess kind
of. Or they're kind of doing like Ivan Drago.
Yeah, which makes sense for his look, but it's kind of weird because he's American. I don't know.
Yeah. And then they give him a name that's harder to pronounce.
Right.
But okay. Riddle interview. I liked it. Showing off his personality. What about you?
Yes, this is the best that Riddle has looked outside of the ring in NXT so far.
Exactly. Hey, Dijakovic, beating our boy AC Mack in a squash. What it needed to be, right?
Yeah. The Mack of all trades comes out here looking totally different. I was like, for a second, I was like, is this a different guy wearing his gear? But it's him. And pretty solid, you know, lamb to the slaughter baby face, getting his ass kicked here. Dijak looked vicious. I'll give him some credit. He came out here looking to do it in his actual wrestling. The facials I could do without. Some of them were a little over the top, but whatever. He'll get there. Just looks unnatural, kind of. But the actual execution of his moves looked like he turned it up. He was looking bigger and badder than he has recently. So I'll give him some credit for that.
Yep. Heavy Machinery vignette. We don't really need it. We get it. But then they have a match.
Main roster. It's like they're doing a vignette video for a team that's already leaving.
Yep, exactly. But they have a really fun squash where they murder this team, huh?
Yeah, this is great. This was done really well to heat them back up for clearly, trying to set up a title challenge. I just don't know when the plan is for that. But yeah, this was done really well for that.
And then the main event, then we get into the main event of cage match, Black versus Gargano. You can either pin, submission, or escape the cage. I like Gargano sneak attacking early, and before they get in the cage, they fight around the cage. Black turns the tie, turns the tide, and then starts kicking his ass. Love Gargano trying to escape immediately out of the cage. But cage matches in 2018 mean absolutely nothing because people get in and out of it way too easy, and there's no stakes to it. We see Gargano go into the cage four times. I like that they're using it as a weapon. I'm enjoying the stiffness of this. Then we see Ciampa do his Terry Gordy to Ric Flair and slam his head into the gate. Black. The finish makes zero sense in how Gargano was booked. It ended up just ruining the match where Gargano and Ciampa, who have had a blood feud, decide to revert back to their old tag team. I mean, even if you use the motto, my friend is still garbage. I mean, it just wipes away the whole entire last year of what the fuck happened. And maybe it should, because Johnny Gargano really lost the Loser Leave Town match and never left town. Fuck. I mean, I don't know how. Who approved this? Who rubber stamped this fucking finish? Terrible shit. What about you? What did you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I was with you. I was with the match. I enjoyed it. I thought everything was done super well. Pretty much the whole way through until
They run off a fucking cliff, huh?
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, I'm kind of a stickler for the steel cage stip, and really it's been ruined quite a lot in the past, I don't know, couple decades, really, especially in WWE. Yeah. I mean, realistically, it's just because WWE has, like, almost historically never taken the steel cage match very seriously, except for, really, Bruno, probably was, like, the only time that they really took the steel cage and had it mean something. And then ever since then, they've just kind of, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to get super into that, but I do think that they were doing a good job of treating it like the stipulation mattered, using the cage as a weapon. But I would like more focus from, like, the being able to escape and going for pins and submissions. I like, if you're going to have both options, I think that you should really set the precedent that, you know, the babyface doesn't go for escapes, is going for pins. The heel is trying to escape as much as possible. And I think that while they did that, they didn't make it super clear. They didn't make it very obvious to beat you over the head with that is the concept of it, so that you can really, it gets more heat on the heel. I realistically, to me, I don't want the heel going for any kind of submissions or pins at all. I want him purely only trying to escape. I mean, so when you have Gargano going for long submission sequences in the middle of the match, it does, to me, it kind of hurts that part of it. Otherwise, though, I thought that they did a good job of that. But I also think NXT is, like, they did a good job of not using any weird stipulations for a long time, and then now it feels like they've just really done a bunch of cage matches. They've introduced war games, so now it feels like I remember NXT was doing such a good job that one of their fucking pay-per-views, Takeover or whatever, was Fatal 4-Way. It was like a 4-Way dance was a big deal. Like, that was a stipulation that meant something in NXT early on.
Yeah, and they ruined them all. They lost, okay, Loser Leave Town. Nope, doesn't mean anything. Cage match, fuck no.
Yeah,
dude. War games, nope. Nope, doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. How many, you know, Last Man Standing, all that kind of stuff. Now they're doing way too much. So that just kind of hurt it. And then, yes, the finish is real stupid. And it's the perfect kind of, you know, cherry on the top for the shit Sunday that has been the DIY storyline that just really went from the heights of all heights to the deepest of all lows here where, yeah, now somehow we have a heel DIY team that's like, ah, what the fuck? Like, that's really the only feeling I can have coming out of it is just, what the fuck? And it just, I feel like they did a really bad job kind of hammering over the head, like with the, I really liked what they did in the last, you know, episode a couple weeks ago, where Ciampa was manipulating both guys into doing his dirty work for him by them beating up each other instead of, you know, going after him for his title match. And then by the end of this, it just really feels like you just completely shit that. And that was a nice little wrinkle that Ciampa did a good job with, kind of playing that sleazy character. And then now it just feels, again, it just feels so wasted. Like, it doesn't feel like that really was, like, clever or matters anymore because it's like, oh, Gargano didn't get taken advantage of. He's into it. He's buddies with Ciampa now. So he wasn't actually getting manipulated by the uber heel. He was in on the whole thing from the beginning, you almost kind of feel like, which is, like I said, just kind of ruins that heat that you could have had there.
Agreed. The bottom line is the main event leaves the whole entire show flat. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, really kind of ruins the whole feeling coming out of it. Makes me not care at all about the main event that's coming up with, you know. And that was another thing, too. They show the main event card where they show Aleister Black versus Ciampa at the TakeOver. And to me, at that point, I had not really thought that that was for sure happening because it felt like this match was kind of setting that up. And so putting that before this match really kind of takes away any suspense. Even if it was already the case, it really feels like it's kind of hitting you over the head with it. That, like, this match doesn't matter. This match doesn't affect anything. Like, you know, it just felt like, you know what the title match is. This match does not affect that. And it really feels like they should have been at least trying to treat it a little bit like this match would matter in the bigger ramifications of the title.
Yep. Before we talk about the Scenic City trios, check out check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to support other podcasts along with match reviews, features, and retrospectives, reviews of wrestling books, video games, and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at the PWO forums. We've been online for over a decade, and with over 2,000 registered members and our archive of over 4 million threads, our message board is a vibrant community all its own. Whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the microscope forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling past and present, check out all of this and more at www.prowrestlingonly.com. Scenic City Rumble. I mean, trios here. It did not look like it had a huge crowd. Kind of a dead crowd, too. What do you think?
Yeah, the crowd was not amazing. But historically, trios wrestling is not necessarily huge in America. I can see why that's not a huge draw. I think Scenic City does a great job with the trios tournament every time. I think they did a really good job here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did feel like the crowd was not super into it. And I mean, you know, this is anecdotal, real world experience, but like, you know, my wife is a casual wrestling fan. She likes wrestling. She watches it with me. She goes to shows. She's into it. But she doesn't like matches that have usually more than 4 people in them. Just intrinsically, it's harder for her to follow. She doesn't get into it as much. And I think that can be said for probably a lot of people who aren't as hardcore of wrestling fans.
Then, okay. What do you think of the opening match?
I thought that, you know, you're just talking about it. How do you do it right? You got the two baby faces going against the two heels. I think that AJ Gray and O'Shea did a great job here playing the underdog baby faces to really set up Team Tag coming out of this as the big time heels for the entire tournament. I thought that Team Tag looked really good as being the kind of the main unit for the whole show, really. Really felt like they felt like the team to beat in a lot of ways. So I thought that that was done super well. Realistically, I thought that, yeah, like the Heat was done well. Like I said, O'Shea looked great. Everyone really looked pretty good here. So yeah, I came out of it 3 stars. I thought a great way to set up the kind of the feeling for the future of the entire show, especially with just kind of, like I mentioned, Team Tag being set up as the really the team to watch for the entire tournament in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'm with you. I give it 2.5. I mean, I had little problems like O'Shea. I know he just turned babyface. But him and AJ Gray were having a blood feud just months ago, so I didn't like them to be tagged in a handicap match. I enjoyed the heat on Gray. I thought O'Shea's hot tag was really great. Spectre cuts it off. Super fun finish. I just think I think this dynamic didn't work. We had the two baby faces really shouldn't be on the same page. I think we should have gone with the story of these guys are not on the same page, and we didn't really get that. We didn't get anything from that. I just had some flaws, and I wish, I wish Dylan on commentary would have explained it away a little better, a little bit more clear on why Edwards is teaming with Gray Edwards was part of that team of Ison and Stallion who beat the crap out of him. So, I don't know. I mean, it's like one of those things. Is the trios kind of by itself where it should be treated separately? It's like, you know, like when I've been at Mania weekends before where, you know, in a progress show, Matt Riddle hurt his neck, but he doesn't show up in any of his matches for Evolve. He just sells it up during his progress run. So that's kind of how I felt like this. Okay, normally I wouldn't say Team Sup. It doesn't matter. This is a different promotion. What happened in Sup shouldn't matter here, but they were referring to him as Team Sup. So I think the consequences that happened in SUP should follow them here as like the laws of physics in a way.
Yeah.
You understand?
Which I was going to point out. I was going to say that as you were talking about it too. It's
okay.
Like, yes, they are Team SUP. So I think that the booking of SUP does affect because you're recognizing that SUP exists.
Yeah, just like one throwaway line. Like they put their animosity behind them as a united front because they care about SUP so much. Just one little line like that, or even a promo or something explained away would have been fine. It would have been sufficed to me. I mean, I just need something to explain it to me or to justify it to me. Next match, we get Cross, Ali, and Allen Angels versus Slim J, Yehi, and Carter. So it's the C4 team versus Team Action. And I gave this 3.5 stars. Pretty cool watching Angels go move to move with Cam Carter, which is pretty damn hard to do. Digging the shines here from both sides. Has a very Lucha-esque feel to it. The openings where you're pairing off. Yehi with a dive. Carter almost killed himself on that dive. Yehi going nuts. Slim J with a corkscrew plancha was awesome. Loved Ikes and I can't even read my writing, but Angles and Ike's interactions. Thus, Allen Angels has looked to me from all the matches I've seen. So good for him. A super fun match overall. I mean, just all action, big moves, but they were built to and earned. What do you think, man?
Yeah, very similar take on all of it. It's the Futures team, and I think Angels has looked really good, but I'm with you here. He looks great. I think getting to show off a little bit more, not as focused on the kind of heel shtick, just because of the setting. There was some sloppiness with the dives and some stuff that felt a little bit forced and miscommunication, mistiming that came across a little bit too obvious, especially on the dives and stuff that hurt the match a little bit to me. I gave it 3.25, but I'm with you that I thought they did a really good job setting up team action. I thought Team Future looked great. I thought Ike Cross looked really good playing the big man in the match, even. Really came across feeling like a star. Enjoyed Fred or Slim Jake getting the win with, I guess, what would be more time frame correct for him as the Storm Cradle driver, based on the time that he came up in wrestling. So, I just thought pretty well done overall as the second match, especially after what you got in the first match that was really, like, setting up the big bads. Then this match feels like, now what are we looking at as the baby faces of the tournament? And Action comes out strong, feeling like the clear baby faces of the tournament.
Yep. Next up, we have Bandy Johnson and Star versus Stallion, Ison, and Koo. Again, I have problems with the Team Sup team, where bottom line is Cam Carter left him to rot. He was supposed to, you know, Stallion, Ison, and Koo, I don't understand it. Stallion left Ison and those guys high and dry, and here they're teaming up again. Again, I needed something to explain the logic of their team besides the, you know, my enemy is my friend logic. And I thought they missed the ball on that. But what about you overall on the match?
The match I enjoyed. It was a little bit, it felt a little bit quick. I don't even know if it was necessarily much faster than any other match lengthwise, but it felt fast. Liked Koo in here. He looked pretty badass with the other two guys, so that was a solid kind of situation for him, because I think that he could have been overshadowed, honestly. Stallion, I hate to say this because it's not politically, I know that there's a lot of people who really like Stallion, but I think that and this is purely just the way he presents himself and his facials. I don't think he's a very good heel. I think he makes faces. He does this in AAW too, where he's tagging with Jake something. He makes these faces, and the way that he kind of looks directly into the camera and just kind of the vibe that he gives off, where he's clearly trying to come across like he thinks he's really cool, I think. And it just feels uncomfortable to me, and it doesn't feel like he really, which could be a meta thing where it's like it's a heel because he's trying to act cooler than he really is. I don't fucking know, but it irks me a little bit. I'm with you on the kind of storyline not really making sense. I think that the WWA4, really nobody did much for themselves except for Bandy looking decent but also not great. Nobody else really stood out or made much for themselves in the match. I gave it 2.75 star, and I was with you on pretty much everything you were talking about with the Iron Elbows team as well. It just seems kind of forced, and it's unfortunate because I think that this team was, there were some replacement issues, and I know that, you know, that is not necessarily fair to judge a promotion or a tournament like this on what they're able to pull off, because they do a really good job on this show overall with the booking, and the way that they made the stories work, but unfortunately, I can only judge the show based on what I see, and I can't necessarily take into account and judge matches and shows on, like, what would have happened if someone's car didn't break down or whatever weird issue caused your booking to get messed up.
Next up, we got, I like the match. I give it 2.5. I love the dives for the shine. Big time heat segment on Johnson. I mean, it was well worked and stuff. What star did you give it?
I gave it 2.75.
Okay. Then we got LaRue versus LaRue, Yuta, and Frazier versus the Carnies and Trip Cassidy. You know, so weird. I did not like the match very much. There was some problem. Nova Pro was having problems. That story guy got over. But coming out of this match, I want to see a Yuta and the Carry Awful match, which is not what the matches I think they want us to want. But that's what I want to see. And that match, singles match, seems like it could be really good. But it's like a weird dynamic. What you make of it?
Yeah, I actually, if I'm perfectly honest, I came out of it wanting to see Yuta versus really all three of the Carnies in a singles match. I'm relatively high on Yuta as a potential star kind of guy. I think he's got something there, and he's really putting it together, I think, even as a character in a babyface. It shows a little bit here in this match. It's weird because, yeah, the Nova Pro, it's almost like the opposite of what you want from the other situations with, like, the SUP and the Iron Elbows team, where you want some kind of background or something kind of giving you more of the story of what's going on with these guys being a team, but you're getting it from the Nova Pro guys here, so I think that they did a good job there. But the glaring thing from there is that I think the story that you really should be telling is on the opposite end, with the Carnies not being as cohesive of a unit. And I think they teased it a little bit here, but I don't think that they did as well, and I don't think that it helps you to have both teams kind of teasing a little bit of dissension in the same match.
Yeah. It got convoluted, didn't it?
Yeah, so I gave the match 2.25, mostly because of that, that aspect of it. But I thought that Yuta came out being good, and I think Logan Easton and LaRue, I want to see some of that spark that we were seeing last year, especially in CWF. I don't know what's going on, but I just haven't been seeing it anymore.
That leads us into Team Buck and Team Tag versus Yay High, Carter and Slim J. What you make of this one?
Really liked the heat from Team Tag. Really loved the way that Yay High sold it. I felt like he came across big time, like he was losing his fucking mind. Especially when he's throwing the chair and he's coming into the ring to break up pins. He was just completely pissed off at this heel team and the fucking bullshit that they're willing to do. The hot tag to Slim J was not only done super well, but also I thought the actual execution of the front flip, kind of assisted front flip from Cam Carter to set up the tag, I thought was really neat and super cool. I think that then having Yehi come in untagged to assist with the hot tag was actually done pretty well because of the fact that he had shown that he was losing his mind on the apron so much. It makes sense. Like, they set that up really nicely. I thought that was a really nice little wrinkle from Yehi that he didn't just, for no reason, come into the ring when he wasn't allowed to, even though he's a babyface. He had, like, kind of set up that he was really pissed off, and that's why he was willing to do that. I thought the Team Tag looked really good here. I thought that the finish was done super well for Team Tag, using the numbers game repeatedly throughout. And I thought Team Tag, at this point, were very clearly becoming the stars of the show to me. Especially with, you know, the actual Team Tag, not Billy Buck, but the other two guys being guys that me and you have both kind of seen as also-rans, kind of just there in action. I thought that they were really hitting their roles well here, especially coming out. Now they've come out for the second time, and they have different gear, different shirts, different, you know, unit kind of look. It really is making them come across like a polished unit, as opposed to everyone else here. I gave the match 3.25. I really thought that everyone looked really good here. What did you think of the match?
The main event. Oh, wait, hold on here. We were talking. Which one are we talking? I'm sorry, I'm losing my mind here. Huh?
Team Action versus Team Tag.
Oh yeah, I liked it. I gave it 3.25. Chaos ensues to start. I like Cam as the face in peril. I thought they did a good job working him over. I thought the neck work on Cam's makes sense, especially because of that bump he took in the first round. So I like the narrative where the consequences of something that happened in a match carries over to this match. I don't know if that's what was intention, but that's how I'm taking it. Really good storytelling here. Love Team Action's comeback. And the finish was a great payoff to everything there. I give it 3.25. And that gets us into the Carnies versus Stallion, Ison, and Coup. What do you think of that match?
This one, another one, I thought that they did an even better job with the start of this being a real fracas kind of outing, brawling all around the building. I thought the commentary did the best job here as they did all night, really playing off the history, talking about these teams having issues with each other in the past, or all of these guys having issues with each other in the past, the Carnies having history in the SCI trios, especially Kerry Offal, getting injured in the past at the SCI trios. So I thought that was done really well. I thought that this was perfect, showing the united front against the heels as a team, while also a little bit of cracks, especially towards the end. Really just all around super well done. 3.5 star. Really hot action, great storytelling, great history. Everything I thought was done super well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I liked the fighting all over the building. It made it feel special and different. Fun storyline with the which was happening on. Yeah, I give it 3.25. I really enjoyed it too. Then we got AC Mack versus Gary J. And I mean, I liked it, but I was kind of disappointed in the match. I gave it 2.5. I thought it was fun. Fun strike exchange, and we could see Gary J's topes, but I don't know. They just didn't seem like they were on the same. They clicked 100%. It was good, still good, solid stuff, but it didn't suck me in, if you would. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I gave it 2.5, and it felt like it was a match in the middle of the tournament. That's a non-tournament match, just to kind of give people a little bit of a breather, which is not necessarily what I want or expect from either guy. I thought the stuff with the vest was good, and it goes to show kind of even similar to the stuff that I talked about with the Mac versus Gangrel match, where he does a pretty good job of these kind of interlude type matches, where he can work with someone or work with a unique or interesting idea to make a nice little wrinkle for something that's not necessarily about being a steal the show type match. So that honestly is something that I think gets overlooked a lot of times for quality wrestlers, that ability to fit your role while also doing something unique and interesting. So I still gave the match 2.5 because I'm with you that it didn't click necessarily perfectly. And I think part of that is just the fact that while I talk about that with Mac, I don't think Gary J has that same depth. I've never seen Gary J really be able to work kind of a different place other than kind of what he does, which is stuff that's a little bit go, 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 and a little bit kind of honestly in the vein of the modern day, strong style main event setting type match seems to be what he prefers to do. I guess I didn't see a lot of submission squad stuff, so I don't necessarily know to say that he did more comedy stuff with them. It would make sense that he did. But it feels like now in single settings, he doesn't really know how to do much but kind of that one style.
Yeah, I can totally understand that point of view. And then we get to the main event of Team Tag versus the Carnies team. And not that. I mean, we get that then we get the Jade Newman and Wright versus, I think it's actually the coach and stuff.
Yeah, it's like the local school coach.
Yeah, I thought it was fun for what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, they did a good job. They did a good job, and the coach got involved enough to make it really fun, probably for the crowd there that knows who he is. So yeah.
And then we get Team Tag versus Buck and then we get the Carnies, Team Carney. Okay, Shine by the Carnies. Loving Team Tag's heat segment here. But then it all falls apart, and I don't want to see the Carnies feud. I understand why they're doing it. or breaking up because they're, you know, they probably wrestled every team they could possibly wrestle. It's time to try something different. Be different, and we enjoy it. But it's kind of like the Hardy Boys. We don't want to see you guys break up. We love you guys as a unit and not individually. And it's been rough. I gave it 2.5, but I'm just not liking it. What about you?
I liked it probably, I guess, a bit more than you. Primarily just because I thought Team Tag fucking killed it here. Their heat, especially on the fucked up ankle of Carry Awful, was sick. Just going after it repeatedly, everyone focusing on it super hard. Carry Awful selling it, but, you know, I mean, Carry doesn't sell a lot, but I think he did a pretty good job here. Stuff like falling and, you know, getting whipped out of the corner. Guys just, yeah, repeatedly going after it. The knee stunner or ankle stunner is pretty cool. Repeated submission holds. I really thought the Team Tag fucking just shined big here. Again, talking about they come out, they've got even different gear. This is all Power Rangers themed gear with Power Ranger themed shirts, which I thought was just cool that they had three different sets of gear for each match. Really just puts over that shitty heelishness. Cutting off the tag from Carry when he finally gets a chance, it just feels so just terribly heelish. But then, you know, Iggy and Trip come back from there, and then you kind of get like a hot double tag with on the floor and in the ring, and then back and forth and all around. So I thought that there was some, really good stuff, especially that heat from Team Tag really made the match. But yeah, I get you that the feud, especially at the end when it felt like everything was fine, they won the trophies, they stand tall with the trophies, and then Carry turns on him. It just felt a little weak, especially with Carry being the one to do the attacking after selling the ankle so big throughout the match. But I'll kind of give them, even though it should probably, based on the way that I usually grade things, should actually affect the match because I will usually account for something like this as part of the match rating. I thought the heat was great, and I love Team Tag after the fucking breakup. They grab the trophies and they gloat even more because they're just such pricks. So I gave the match 3.25 overall just for the whole thing. I thought Team Tag looked fucking phenomenal here. I thought their heat on, like I said, on Carry Awful was great.
Okay. Do you want to see the Carnies break up?
No, I do not. I'm definitely with you on that, that the breakup of the Carnies is not where it's at. As the kids would say, that ain't it, Chief. But yeah, I thought, like I said, I thought that the Team Tag was really the stars of this match.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. Overall, I give the show a thumbs up. I enjoyed it. I like the action. I like the work. I mean, I'm fundamentally against the Carnies breaking up, but I understand where they're coming from. And it will help them, give them a fresh coat of paint. But the big key is what happens to them after their feud. So then that's the key. So in a few months, see where they're being booked and stuff. But overall, good fun stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that, like I said, the cohesive storytelling throughout was done really well, even with a lot of mix up with teams and stuff kind of going in and out. I thought they did a good job of having a narrative throughout the whole thing, especially having it in with two teams that really felt like teams coming out of it, which I thought did a good job of helping push that narrative.
Yep. All right, man. Anything you want to plug before we head out of here?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead, and I guess we'll see you next week.
Yep. Follow me on Titans of Wrestling. Catch you later. See ya. Bye.
Just live till you die, I won't drown. With nowhere to fall into the arms.